following is an evening meeting given by His Divine Grace Srila Satswarup Das Goswami Gurupad in Boston on November 22, 1983.
But because you're a devotee, the Lord said, your body belongs to Krishna. Because a devotee surrenders his body, mind, and words to Krishna. Therefore, having given it to Krishna, it's Krishna's property. You cannot destroy another person's property. So, we're appreciating together these statements by Lord Chaitanya. Now, how we can apply them ourselves to use all our energy in the service of Krishna with that attitude that actually our life is meant for serving Him. Anyway, then Sanatana Goswami is introduced to the company of Lord Chaitanya and his associates. Sanatana Goswami was dear to everyone because of his exalted qualities in learning. Suitably, therefore, they bestowed upon him mercy, friendship, and honor. They means the different associates of Lord Chaitanya. Now, these three words are significant, that these associates of Lord Chaitanya, they gave him mercy, friendship, and honor. That means that among devotees, as well as from devotees to non-devotees, there are appropriate relationships. For example, those devotees who gave Sanatana Goswami their mercy, they were in a superior position or a senior position to him. They had mercy to give. They mentioned here the persons he was introduced to those who know the pastimes of Lord Chaitanya, Advaita, Nityananda, Srivats, Prakeshwara. So obviously, personalities like Advaita and Nityananda, they're senior to Sanatan, and so they could give him their mercy. Every one of us is capable of these different relationships with others. We'll all find some people who are senior to us, more advanced in spiritual life. We'll all find some who are our equals, and we'll all find someone who is in a less advanced position than we are. For example, the preacher, devotee, Madhyama Adhikari, he's advised to have four kinds of relationships with different persons, starting with the Supreme Person or God. So in his relationship with God, he should give all his love. That is the prime relationship in life. And the spiritual master, he's the via media of your relationship to Krishna. So therefore we honor the spiritual master as we honor Krishna. Although they're different. So to God, he gives his love. Then to the devotees of God, he gives his friendship. And then to the innocent non-devotees who are forgetful of God, but who are not directly blasphemous or atheistic, demoniac, he goes to them and gives mercy. So this is another example of giving mercy. In that sense, every devotee is required to give the mercy of Krishna to all people. We're not proud that we actually have mercy to give anyone, but if you have received the holy name of Krishna, then that great fortune that you've been given should be given to others. So basically the relationship of the devotee to all innocent non-devotees is to be merciful to them. We can give them mercy. Prasad means mercy. When you give the remnants of food offered to Krishna to a person, that's mercy. To give them the name of Krishna, to give them the books. Sometimes they don't want it, but we give them the mercy, even though they're not appreciative. The example is like a doctor. He treats patients. Sometimes patients become delirious and they insult the doctor when he comes, but he doesn't take offense and he tries to give them the treatment. So a devotee, he has to be like that. Titikshava karunika. He has to be tolerant and give them mercy. And the fourth kind of relationship is with the asura, or the demon. And actually the devotee doesn't develop a relationship with him. It is not favorable. The demon, he will blaspheme God, ridicule, and actually if a devotee insists on having a relationship with him, it will even cause the demoniac person more offense. So what is the benefit of developing that relationship? We're told not to approach the faithless person with the glories of the holy name. Of course, sometimes a devotee attempts that also, but this general instruction is there, that the best treatment is to avoid them. But I'm discussing here mercy, friendship, and honor. Mercy is given by the more advanced, and we should seek out that mercy. Although all devotees distribute mercy to the non-devotees, we should seek mercy from the more advanced person in terms of serving them and inquiring from them. Because the question may be, well, how do I know who's advanced? Of course, in the standard Vedic culture, the Brahmin is taken as advanced, the sannyasi is taken as advanced. Although someone may cheat in the guise of a certain ashram or position, and also someone may be more advanced no matter what ashram he's in. One by birth could be a shudra, or one could be a family man and still be more advanced. But there are symptoms in all the scriptures of an advanced person, like the 26 qualities of a devotee describe the real qualities. So when you see them, someone's always talking about Krishna. He's actually, of course, following the rules and regulations of spiritual life. And other symptoms of attachment to Krishna. So we should, when we see that by actual practice, we shouldn't be envious of such persons, but we should try to serve them and hear from them. This is the relationship of receiving mercy. And friendship, we've already described. Mercy, friendship, and honor. In other words, those who were junior to Sanatan, they approached him and honored him, gave him respects, or made obeisances to him. These things are not Sometimes people see devotees exchanging in these ways. They think we're being fanatical, or they may think it is a ritual. But these things, they're etiquette, and they should be done from the heart also. Or what is the point of doing them? There are external exchanges and internal exchanges, but they're based on these principles. In this way, Sanatana was received into the associates of Lord Chaitanya. So there are a few other incidents in this chapter about Sanatana Goswami. One time, while he was living in Jagannath Puri, Lord Chaitanya called him to come to join him around noontime to take their prasadam together. So in order to reach Lord Chaitanya, Sanatana would have to pass on the road, but he chose instead to go by the route along the beach. But along the sandy beach, it was as hot as fire, and he, walking in his bare feet, is burnt his feet into blisters. So when he approached Lord Chaitanya, he understood that he had taken the path by the beach. He said, "Why did you do this? Why didn't you go on the road where it's very cool?" So Sanatana said that, which was brought up also in the section last night, that along the road to the temple, many of the priests or pujaris used to come and go. So those who go on the altar to worship the deity, they always have to keep very, very clean. And they shouldn't, before going on the altar, touch ordinary persons or touch anything practically. Therefore, Sanatana Goswami, in his humility, because he also thought he was low-born person, and that is the also his mood. A devotee thinks of himself as fallen, and in the case of Sanatana Goswami, he actually thought of himself as an objectionable person. We think a devotee thinks like that when he reflects on his lack of love of Krishna. There's nothing wrong with this. It is not like a neurosis of inferiority. It is a much different thing. It is a deep spiritual thing, a feeling of unworthiness before God or before the devotees of God. When a devotee like Sanatana Goswami feels like that, or Krishnadas Kaviraj, we shouldn't misunderstand. Krishnadas Kaviraj was so exalted that through him, all the pastimes of Lord Chaitanya were told. He was empowered by Krishna to speak. And yet he said that, "I am a very low person. I am like a worm that lives in stool. And if anyone remembers my name as the author of this book, then he'll lose his pious activities by association with him." So why describe himself in such extreme terms like that? That is inconceivable to an ordinary person. Every ordinary materialist, he's always trying to puff himself up. So he wants people to think that his name is great, that he is great. That's his whole effort, to be adored and respected by material opulence. So they'll not be able to understand why devotees like Krishnadas Kaviraj and Sanatana Goswami are thinking themselves fallen. But the basic understanding is, it is a kind of meditation on the greatness of God to feel one's own unworthiness. And even if you're considered a devotee, then what the devotee thinks, "Why don't I have more devotion? Krishna, I know Krishna a little bit. unlike the non-devotees. They may not know Krishna, but I know and I've heard of his attractiveness and his greatness. Why don't I love him more? Or why don't I feel more pain and separation from him? If I'm actually a devotee of God, I'm supposed to love him, but I find that I go about my daily activities, maintenance of the body, and other obligations in a way that shows that I'm forgetful of Krishna from moment to moment. Therefore, what kind of a lover of God am I? So in this way, a real devotee won't give himself credit that he's a Vaishnava. In a conventional sense, we say that, oh, I'm a Vaishnava. But to be a Vaishnava is a very great thing. We should rather think we are a servant of the Vaishnava. So he was so humble that rather than walk on the road and pass the pujaris, and he, as he felt it, contaminate them, he walked along the hot beach. But because he was in transcendental consciousness, he didn't feel that he actually burned his feet. So he reported this to Lord Chaitanya. Lord Chaitanya said, "The hot sand must have blistered your soles. Now you cannot walk. How did you tolerate it?" Sanatana Goswami replied, "I did not feel much pain, nor did I know that there are blisters because of the heat. I have no right to pass by the Shimhadvara, for the servants of Jagannath are always coming and going there. If I touch them, I shall be ruined." Hearing all these details, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, greatly pleased, spoke as follows, "My dear Sanatana, although you are the deliverer of the entire universe, and although even the demigods and great saints are purified by touching you, it is the characteristic of a devotee to observe and protect the Vaishnava etiquette. Maintenance of the Vaishnava etiquette is the ornament of a devotee. If one transgresses the laws of etiquette, people make fun of him, and thus he is vanquished in both this world and the next." Lord Chaitanya's appreciation is on the basis of Sanatana obeying Vaishnava etiquette. This is also not a material thing, like there are so many books on etiquette. Emily Post, Amy Vanderbilt, how to behave at dinner, which fork to use, when your brother-in-law comes or your mother-in-law, what to do, what to say, how to maintain correspondence, how to behave in public on the bus. These are very useful things for materialists. Also, if you don't obey them, people will make fun of you. But for a devotee, he's speaking of something different. I've mentioned, for example, the etiquette of relationships with different persons. So if a devotee doesn't recognize these things properly, it is a spiritual deficiency, or if he ignores them. Like when there's different etiquette about the deity, many important items, how to behave in front of the deity of the Lord. These were put into books by Sanatana Goswami and Rupa Goswami. So Sanatana Goswami was to be the author of the books of Vaishnava etiquette. Therefore, it's expected that he himself would know how to behave in an ideal way. Even if it causes some inconvenience, the etiquette is to be observed. Jai Dave observing etiquette all right? Are you watching?
He's doing his best.
under five, they don't have to observe the etiquette.
Just over.
Uh-oh. By observing the etiquette, you have satisfied my mind. Who else but you will show this example? After saying this, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu embraced Sanatana Goswami, and the moisture oozing from the itching sores on Sanatana's body smeared the body of the Lord. This is what Sanatana tried to avoid before. We had these sores from his disease and the personality of Godhead. Lord Chaitanya was embracing him. Sanatana felt ashamed, but Lord Chaitanya just saw him in a different way and embraced his pure devotee. So after that, then he left. Lord Chaitanya left them, Haridas Thakur and Sanatana Goswami, these two humble and yet exalted persons. They began to talk about Lord Chaitanya's greatness. And then another devotee, a younger devotee, Jagadananda Pandit, he came and joined them. So Sanatana Goswami began speaking confidentially to him, and he said, "Since I've come to Jagannath Puri, I've been so inauspicious. I've caused Lord Chaitanya inconvenience by his embracing me, and then I spoke foolishly about committing suicide, and he said that this was a very sinful, foolish idea. And in Jagannath Puri, I can't go into the temple because I'm not worthy to enter the temple. So all these things have happened since I've been here, and this is making me unhappy." So when Jagannanda Pandit heard this, he suggested that why doesn't Sanatana Goswami then go back to Vrindavan? Because that is the real place where the Lord wanted him to work. He said, Jagannanda Pandit said, "The Lord has already ordered both of you brothers to situate yourselves in Vrindavan. There you will achieve all happiness. Your purpose in coming has been fulfilled, for you have seen the lotus feet of the Lord. Therefore, after seeing Lord Jagannath on the Ratha Yatra car, you can leave." Sanatana Goswami replied, I'll read the Bengali. Sanatan kahe, bala kara upadesh, tahan yaba se mora prabhudata desh. This means, Sanatana Goswami replied, "You have given me very good advice. I shall certainly go there, for that is the place the Lord has given me for my residence." So this is a significant phrase, prabhudata desh. And it means the place of residence given to a devotee by the spiritual master or the Prabhu. Now, we can understand this in terms of the worldwide mission of Lord Chaitanya, that in every town and village the name of God should be known, chanted. Therefore, if this is to be carried out, devotees have to go to all different places in the world. No place should be excluded. And our spiritual master, Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada, is actually the first one to carry this out in the Vaishnava history. So his followers have been assigned to different places in the world to preach. And they may assign their followers also. So this being located by the guru in a particular field is very important for the disciple, and he should consider that his land. This is a more, to this land he should be very dedicated. It is not nationalism, it is beyond that. We are detached from a nation, but a devotee should be attached to Prabhudatta Desh. His Prabhu, he may be born in America, and his Prabhudatta Desh may be Africa, as in the case of our godbrother Brahmananda Maharaj. His Prabhudesh may be India, or there's like one devotee, he was born in Ireland and raised in Ireland, Prabhu Vishnu Swami, and now his Prabhudatta Desh is Nepal. So unlikely thing, materially, combination. I remember when he was reporting to Prabhupada about his successes there, and because actually devotees have success wherever they go. All human beings can receive Krishna consciousness, and even when we go to faraway lands, we find that is true. Devotees are preaching in all different countries of different religions and different races. I remember, so this Prabhu Vishnu Swami, when he was telling Prabhupada, Prabhupada was very pleased that he was preaching in such a place, and he encouraged him. He said, you should go there with the courage of an Englishman and the heart of a Bengali mother. And he should go to the people of that land and give them the mercy of Krishna consciousness. We should take, there's another way of saying the assignment given to you, or the place where the assignment is. But we should adopt this and become dedicated to some place under the order of the Guru. It's a fact that this was the Prabhudatta Desh of Sanatana Goswami, to go to Vrindavan. You can love Vrindavan or you can love New York if that's where you're meant to go to do preaching activities. And if you if it's not your Prabhudatta Desh and you're going there, then it's sense gratification, even if it is Vrindavan. And the hellish place like Boston or New York can become as good as Vrindavan if that's where you are dedicating your devotional service and Lord Chaitanya's following. So the advice was not wrong, but we'll see that there was something that didn't please Lord Chaitanya in this. So again, the next day, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu visited the hut of Haridas Thakur, and Sanatana Goswami was there. They began to speak, and Sanatana Goswami began to say how he was going to leave like a Jagannath Puri and go back to Vrindavan. So he says, I am unfit to render service here. I am simply committing offenses day after day. By nature I am low-born. I am a contaminated reservoir of sinful activities. If you touch me, sir, that will be a great offense on my part. Moreover, blood is running from infected itching sores on my body, smearing your body with moisture, but still you touch me by force. Therefore, I see nothing auspicious by staying here. Please give me orders to return to Vrindavan. I have consulted Jagadananda Pandit for his opinion, and he has also advised me to return to Vrindavan. Hearing this, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, in an angry mood, began to chastise Jagadananda Pandit. Jaga, he calls him, which itself is significant that he calls him by a short name or nickname. Must be that he's not very formal, very close to him. Jaga is only a new boy, but he has become so proud that he thinks himself competent to advise a person like you in affairs of spiritual advancement. And even in ordinary dealings, you are on the level of his spiritual master. Yet not knowing his own value, he dares to advise you. My dear Sanatan, you are on the level of my advisor, for you are an authorized person, but Jaga wants to advise you. This is but the impudence of a naughty boy. So this is his, Lord Chaitanya's response. As soon as he heard Sanatan say that that Sanatana had been advised by Jagadananda Pandit, Lord Chaitanya didn't like it. Again, it was a breach of the etiquette that the junior was giving advice to a highly learned person like Sanatana Goswami. Of course, Sanatana didn't feel that way. He accepted Jagadananda Pandit's as a more advanced. But Lord Chaitanya didn't like it. Or at least he was trying to bring something out. So when Sanatana heard this, he was amazed to hear how Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was chastising Jagannanda Pandit and calling him Jagat. So then he says, when Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was thus chastising Jagannanda Pandit, Sanatana Goswami fell at the Lord's feet and said, I can now understand the fortunate position of Jagadananda. I can also understand my misfortune. No one in this world is as fortunate as Jagadananda. Sir, you are making Jagadananda drink the nectar of affectionate relationships, whereas by offering me honorable prayers, you are making me drink the bitter juice of Nimba and Nishinda. It is my misfortune that you have not accepted me as one of your intimate relations, but you are the completely independent Supreme Personality of Godhead. Hearing this, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was somewhat ashamed. Just to satisfy Sanatana Goswami, he spoke the following words. My dear Sanatana, please do not think that Jagadananda is more dear to me than you. However, I cannot tolerate transgression of the standard etiquette. You are an experienced authority in the Shastras, whereas Jagat is just a young boy. You have the power to convince even me. In many places, you have already convinced me about ordinary behavior and devotional service. Jagat's advising you is intolerable for me. Therefore, I am chastising him. I offer you praise, not because I think of you as being outside an intimate relationship with me, but because you are actually so qualified that one is forced to praise your quality. Although one has affection for many persons, different types of ecstatic love awaken according to the nature of one's personal relationships. Sanatana Goswami, he took it that Lord Chaitanya loved Jagannanda more. Even by the fact that he could chastise him like an intimate. Whereas he took it that and he said, my dear Lord, please forgive me for treating you in a familiar way as a friend. Sometimes we would sit together and we would joke and I would not treat you as God. So I'm afraid. Please forgive me. But this ability of them to not always deal in a formal way showed their intimacy. Therefore, Sanatana was lamenting, oh, you always treat me like I'm some learned professor or some scholar of devotional service, and that's because you don't love me in an intimate way. Here you're chastising him, calling him by a nickname. He took it in this way. Not that if he was proud, he could have thought, yes, just see Jagannanda Pandit. I'm a better person than you, and now you're being chastised by Lord Chaitanya. He would have been filled with righteousness and pride if he were an envious kind of person and just basked in the praise of Lord Chaitanya. Lord Chaitanya says that he even learns from me. I am such an exalted person. But he thought, why is the Supreme Lord praising me? He's just keeping me away by doing this. And so Lord Chaitanya, he saw that Sanatana Goswami was so eager for a real loving relationship. We shouldn't understand what are these dealings. These are not ordinary persons. Lord Chaitanya is the Supreme Lord appearing as the pure devotee of the Lord. And these devotees they're giving up all material life and sense gratification. And they're simply trying to engage in devotional service to Krishna. So these are not indulgent dealings. They are dealings of deepest spiritual relationships. Lord Chaitanya, therefore, he pacifies Sanatana and says, I'm not doing this to keep you distant from me when I praise you, but you are actually a person who should be praised by everyone, so I'm praising you. And then he said that the affection that God has towards different devotees, or we may even say that devotees have towards different devotees, it may be different. There are all different ecstasies according to the different personal relationships. In the spiritual world, there's no envy. Krishna has a particular kind of relationship with his mother and father, and he has a different relationship, certainly, with the gopis a different relationship with the counter boys. There's a time when he's attentive to one or the other, a different relationship with the cows and the grass. But there's not envy among them. Or if there appears to be, that is also spiritual. There's no malice. And it's understood that everyone wants to please Krishna, so they're glad. Oh, look, now Krishna is taking pleasure from the cows. Now, how nice, Krishna is taking pleasure with the gopis. Now Krishna is taking pleasure with the Jamuna. And then everybody's saying, now it's our turn. Krishna is taking pleasure from us, the cowherd boys. We'll wrestle with Krishna. We'll play with Krishna. But if Krishna's mood changes, now he wants to take pleasure and be the child of Yasoda and Nanda, his mother and father, then they're pleased. But there are varieties of relationships. And certainly we don't want to disturb those relationships out of envy. Let Krishna be pleased. So Lord Chaitanya is saying, why is it he may have a relationship with Jagannanda Pandit one way and a different relationship with Sanatana? And his relationship with Sanatana, he wants Sanatana to appreciate, is actually that he praises him for exalted qualities. And then Lord Chaitanya gets back to the point about why he is not offended by Sanatana's body with its sores. You consider your body dangerous and awful, but I think that your body is like nectar. Actually, your body is transcendental, never material. You are thinking of it, however, in terms of a material conception. But this is the important point, that a devotee's body is spiritual. If you engage your body full time in serving Krishna, then it's spiritual. And therefore, it's worshipable. Like in the verse, Aradhananam Sarvesham Vishnu Aradhanam Param Tasma Parapparam Devi Tadiyanam Samarchanam. Lord Shiva said, the highest worship is the worship of Vishnu, but worshipping the devotee of Vishnu is even better than that. And the word is used, Tadiyanam, things in relationship to Vishnu. So if your body is used for serving Krishna, therefore it's part of the paraphernalia of Krishna, like Krishna has his flute, so Krishna has his devotee. A devotee will not think of himself that way. I am spiritual, my body is spiritual. He tends to think that his body, like Sanatana does, is a nasty thing. Because he thinks I've used my body in sense gratification. My body is under the modes of nature. But actually, other devotees shouldn't think that way. They should see the devotees as spiritual, in body also, and not make distinctions, therefore, about different persons' bodies, especially those who are engaged in devotional service. So, Lord Chaitanya explains why he doesn't object to the bodily imperfection of his servant. Even if your body were material, I still could not neglect it, for the material body should be considered neither good nor bad. Now he's explaining it in a different way. A sannyasi or any devotee, aside from seeing the Vaishnava's body as spiritual, and therefore not objecting to sores, say, on the body of a Vaishnava. Aside from that, he should not be have objection to anything in the material world. The materialist is very keen to see, to make differences, that something is good, something is bad. Some person is good, some person is bad, some person is in between, all depending on his sense gratification. It's like a man who's looking at a woman in terms of sense gratification. So you may say, this one is good, this one is bad, or the woman is thinking of the man. Based on so many criteria, but these are all plans for sense gratification. Something repulses us,
and something pleases us. So Lord Chaitanya is saying, aside from the fact that your body is spiritual, why should I object? I am a sannyasi. I shouldn't see any body as repulsive based on their bodily condition. And he quotes the Bhagavad Gita, the humble sage, by virtue of true knowledge, sees with equal vision a learned and gentle brahmana, a cow, an elephant, a dog, and a dog eater. So he doesn't even see the animal as horrible. He doesn't see the animal as something that should be killed. But he sees equally, because within each living body there's the spirit soul. This is the basis also for not hating the body of Sanatana Goswami. Since I am in the renounced order, my duty is to make no distinction, but instead to be equipoised. My knowledge must be equally disposed towards sandalwood pulp and dirty mud. He doesn't make a distinction that one is preferable to the other based on material conceptions. For this reason, I cannot reject you. If I hated you, I would deviate from my occupational duty. Now, this is a very nice explanation according to the Shastras, and we should all, who are aspiring for spiritual life, try to adopt it also, and not hate any person or love any person because of their bodily differences. However, when this nice reasoning was applied to Sanatana Goswami, Haridas Thakur, listening, thought that Lord Chaitanya is not revealing his heart as to why he doesn't hate Sanatana. Although the philosophy is correct, he's speaking in a formal, philosophical way, and he's not really speaking his real meaning. Haridas said, "My dear Lord, what you have spoken deals with external formalities. I do not accept it. My Lord, we are all fallen, but you have accepted us due to your attribute of being merciful to the fallen. This is well known all over the world." So this is a deeper reason not to hate another person. Not only the philosophical adjustment that there's a soul in each body, therefore I shouldn't hate or like a person. But Lord Chaitanya actually especially loves his devotees. And so how can he find anything objectionable about them? And therefore Haridas forced Lord Chaitanya to speak his real mind and heart. Lord Chaitanya smiled and said, "Listen, Haridas and Sanatana, now I am speaking the truth about how my mind is attached to you. My dear Haridas and Sanatana, I think of you as my little boys, to be maintained by me. The maintainer never takes seriously any faults of the maintained. I always think of myself as deserving no respect, but because of affection, I always consider you to be my little children. When a child passes stool and urine that touch the body of the mother never hates the child. On the contrary, she takes much pleasure in cleansing him. The stool and urine of the maintained child appear like sandalwood pulp to the mother. Similarly, when the foul moisture oozing from the itches of Sanatana touches my body, I have no hatred for him." Haridas Thakur said, "My dear sir, you are the Supreme Personality of Godhead and are most merciful toward us. No one can understand what is within your deeply affectionate heart. You embraced the leper Vasudeva, whose body was fully infected by worms. You are so kind that in spite of his condition, you embraced him. By embracing him, you made his body as beautiful as that of Cupid. We cannot understand the waves of your mercy." Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, "The body of a devotee is never material. It is considered to be transcendental, full of spiritual bliss. At the time of initiation, when a devotee fully surrenders unto the service of the Lord, Krishna accepts him to be as good as himself. When the devotee's body is thus transformed into spiritual existence, the devotee in that transcendental body renders service to the lotus feet of the Lord." So it goes on and on, these pastimes of Lord Chaitanya. Incomprehensible and without end. But if we can understand a little of these dealings in terms of the philosophy of spiritual life and love exchanges, then we can aspire to become devotees ourselves. How refined and sweet this is compared to the dealings of the materialists toward each other, which are at worst violent fighting or sometimes temporary expressions of affection based on some motivation. These are the real exchanges between human beings, and we have so much to learn when we hear about how Lord Chaitanya dealt with his associates. Well, I'll stop here and ask for some questions. Yes, I'm going to...
Jagannath Pandit gave some advice to Sanat Goswami, his request. So how do we see when, like, Srila Prabhupada would ask some of his disciples for advice, or sometimes the older guy brothers will actually, like, ask advice from somebody?
Specifically, it's not so much stress that Sanatana was actually asking him. He was talking, and Jagananda started giving advice. Doesn't say he asked him for advice. Sanatana Goswami submitted to Jagananda the cause of his distress. Anyway, if a spiritual master asks a disciple for advice, not that you have anything to advise, you may say, "Oh, my dear Guru Maharaj, I have nothing to advise you, but if you're asking me my opinion, then that's my service, so I think." So you can do it in that way, not think, "Oh, my spiritual master is asking me to give advice, therefore I'm in a superior position to him." But no, you can never give advice thinking yourself better than the spiritual master. Spiritual master always is in the superior position. But if that's your service, then you can give some advice. Is being asked advice. I remember, I think I put it in the book Letters from Srila Prabhupada in 1966. I had 26 Second Avenue Temple, and one time we thought we should find another place, so we went and looked at some loft which was inferior to 26 Second Avenue, so you can imagine what it was like. And so we looked at it with Prabhupada, then we went back to his room, and so he asked advice. He must have asked Brahmananda, and Brahmananda was the president of the ISKCON, and I was appointed the secretary by Prabhupada. So I remember at one point he said, "So, Mr. Secretary," which itself was like joking, call me Mister. "Mr. Secretary, what is your opinion?" So asking advice, but you just, it doesn't make you feel puffed up, you feel even more tiny. What good is my advice? But you have some responsibility, so if we get a new place, you'll have to take responsibility, and I want you to be trained into thinking, not just that a disciple is a helpless baby and the spiritual master has to do everything. He's training, it's part of training. What is your opinion? Do you think this is a good place? Use your brains. If it's not a good place, why not? If it is a good place, why? What's your advice? It's another way of instructing. And if he says, Well, I'm only the disciple. I can't give any advice. You do all the thinking. I'll just sit back. I can't give advice to you. Then that's not in the spirit of the, what he wants you to do. Yes?
These activities of praising the other devotees and taking the humble position of himself is also done by us as neophyte devotees, but sometimes it's done in a either a joking way or sometimes even a sarcastic way, and it seems to move the
yes, sure does.
Spirit behind it.
If you do it like that, that's not at all good to practice something, some standard Vaishnava etiquette, but so much it's not at your, so much you're not doing it with your heart that you mock it or joke at it. That's to be offensive. When we address another devotee as Prabhu, Master, we have to actually relate to him in that way. Each devotee always calls another devotee Prabhu. So what you stated may go on, but it should be curbed. Therefore, we don't attempt to make exaggerated, flowery addresses. We have to obey the etiquette. But that's sometimes how that joking happens, when somebody tries to imitate being a Sanatana Goswami, describing himself fallen, but he really doesn't think he's that fallen, but he's trying to be flowery or something. And he really doesn't respect the other devotees that way, but he's trying to cut the figure of being a Vaishnava. So we should not act in exaggerated ways that we haven't realized. Gurudev?
That one last point reminded me of something that everyone says the Prabhupada has done this. Tell me if this is right or not. It certainly sounds like Prabhupada. There was one devotee who was once saying to Prabhupada, "Oh, Prabhupada, I'm so fallen." And he said to me, and snapped back and said, "You're not the most anything."
Yeah, and the devotee said, "I was." Yeah, the devotee said, "Prabhupada, I'm the most fallen." Yeah.
I'm the most fallen.
Said, "You're not the most anything."
Yeah. Then he felt. It was only after that statement that he felt like it was false.
Yeah. Exposing the flowery, sentimental shell of humility. And then you think, well, then you're really humiliated. Oh, I didn't want to be this much humiliated at the bottom. So therefore you see it's imitation, because
I didn't think they believed me.
Yeah. Sanatana was walking, he was so humble he was walking on the hot beach. So we may like to say something, but we don't want to actually be humble and miss out on anything. Haridas Thakur always kept himself apart from the devotees because he didn't think he was worthy to be in with the general assembly of devotees. We may say we're humble, but then if there's some opportunity, our elbows will be there. So you have to pay the price of humility.
Yeah.
But I'm saying, even if we see that we're pretty rough still, then by practice, by sadhana, we have to observe, keep ourselves in check and observe the humility. Hold down your pride and do humble things, even though you're not quite on that level. That should be done, but not the exaggerated show of it. That can be done intellectually, by intellectual acceptance. Lord Chaitanya says, one should think himself lower than the straw in the street. So that's an expression of great humility. To think of yourself as low as a straw in the street. The street is the straw is lower than any poor man. Insignificant thing, yet he says, think of yourself like that. So, again, there was an exchange with Prabhupada where the devotee said, "Prabhupada, how can anybody think of himself like that?" So, And Prabhupada said, because that is your position. So it's not that these devotees like Sanatana Goswami, they've put themselves in some extreme mentality, but they realize the actual situation. For this example, the spirit soul is very, very tiny. It's smaller than a straw in the street. So even philosophically, you should accept that we're a tiny spirit soul, a tiny creature in this material world. I'm saying, therefore, that we can be humble by accepting it as a factual position and containing our pride in that way. If I'm so great a devotee, then why do I have so many dirty things still in my heart? Why have I come into this material world in the first place? Why aren't I still in the kingdom of God? This acceptance of our actual position makes you humble. All we have to do is think of some recent dirty things in our heart, and then we'll become humble.
I was just going to say, in reference to that point, that isn't that what Vaishnavas do? They look at their own limitations and qualities to, and they have a realization of how fallen they are. Like Haridas Thakur was saying, here he is, the Namacharya, and he just considers himself still an outcast, and he won't even get near the house where Lord Chaitanya is. But he'll stay, isn't that right? He usually stays some 50 feet away or something.
Yeah,
like that.
Even when they all meet for prasadam,
he'll be somewhere over, in the background. And here's the Namacharya, and even in every prema dwani we're offering obeisance to him, he's the one that's way in the back, so to speak. Devotees will see their own material, not that they'll look into others and say, oh, look, he's look where he came from, he's not due any respect, but rather look where I came from. So isn't it an important part of Vaishnava etiquette that we learn to perceive, we reverse the table, so to speak, in other words, that we no longer look for all the faults in others, but we start actually seeing our own limitations. And others' position of greatness or superiority. Just like in the Kanishka devotee, the beginner devotee, they come and they think, they see themselves as being better than everyone else. And then gradually, the Namajima says, oh, well, I see that the Supreme Lord is very great, and the devotees are also very great, and then there are people who don't have Lord Chaitanya's mercy, and then people are rather demonic. And then he's a little humbled by that perspective, and then the Uttama thinks that everyone is more worthy of Krishna's service than he is. So the reversal is dramatic from one level to another. But then you were saying earlier that one can't artificially impose that realization. And Lord Chaitanya says so many things. We should think of ourselves more humble and strong in the street. He also says that we should feel ourselves to be a fool before the spiritual master. But he says nothing about acting like a fool before the spiritual master. In other words, there's a fine line. If we think we're so much feeling ourselves to be a fool before the spiritual master, we certainly will start acting like one if it's artificial. So how is one careful in that regard? I guess this gets into the question of imitation and realization and following. This is a very fine line, and sometimes it comes up in preaching instances. Well, Prabhupada would have done that. Well, wait a minute. Are we comparing ourselves to Prabhupada? I mean, these kinds, it's very tricky and subtle, and offenses are easily committed. Willy-nilly offenses are being committed.
We have to become experienced.
Right.
One instruction is that even if one becomes advanced, he should always keep himself as an ordinary devotee. So an advanced devotee won't always display these gems of humility. But if you watch us, you have to be a devotee to understand another devotee. to perceive a devotee, you have to be a devotee. He won't be beating his breast that I'm advanced and humble now, but
right.
you'll be able to see only if you're a devotee.
Right.
A nice example of that imitation of Prabhupada was one incident where the Prabhupada and a devotee went to the UN and were talking to one man there. And in the course of talking, Prabhupada started to speak sternly to him and chastised the man strongly. So then when they were leaving, the devotee and Prabhupada in the car, they were driving. And the devotee said, "Wow, Prabhupada, you really let that man have it. You really, you're so bold the way you preached." And Prabhupada said, "Yes." He said, "But you cannot do that." He said something to the effect, even about the seniority in his age, that Prabhupada was older, although this man was a respectable man in the world and connected with the United Nations, he was younger than Prabhupada and somehow accepted that he's a sadhu. So we have to be careful of all these things. If I go there just like my spiritual master and chew out some official of the United Nations, it may be
a different result.
Yeah, not favorable to the Lord Chaitanya's mission.
But maybe not. But the thing is that if you say that only a devotee can appreciate fully the qualities of the devotee, but at the same time we have Prabhupada illustrating or talking about how even how can you know a Vaishnava when you see one? You can tell by the fact that he is a perfect gentleman. You will not be able to find any fault in him. So even a non-devotee will be able to notice something, or should be able to, unless he's so demonic and he's projecting his own demonic qualities onto the devotee. So even a non-devotee should be able to perceive a certain level of transcendental qualities in some sense. Is that
yes.
correct understanding?
Yes, he should be able to.
But he would never be able to see the potency of service and the more subtle things about it.
Right.
Yeah,
many points.